So when they had eaten up the grain which they had brought out of Egypt, their father said to them, Go again, buy us a little food. Yehuda said to him, The man expressly warned us, You will not see my face unless your brother is with you. If you will send our brother with us, we will go down and buy you food. But if you will not send him, we will not go down. For the man said to us, You will not see my face unless your brother is with you. Israel said, Why did you bring such trouble my way by telling the man you had another brother? They answered, The man kept questioning us about ourselves and about our kinsmen. He asked, Is your father still alive? Do you have another brother? And we answered according to the literal meaning of his questions. How are we to know, he would say, Bring your brother down. Yehuda said to Israel his father, Send the boy with me, and we will make preparations and leave, so that we may stay alive and not die, both we and you, and also our little ones. I myself will guarantee his safety. You can hold me responsible. If I fail to bring him to you and present him to your face, let me bear the blame forever. Except for our lengthy delay, we would have been there again by now. Their father Israel answered them, If that's how it is, do this. Take in your containers some of the land's best products and bring the man a gift. Some healing resin, a little honey, aromatic gum, opium, pistachio nuts, and almonds. Take twice the amount of money with you and return the money that came back with you in your packs. It could have been an oversight. Yes, and take your brother too. And get ready and go again to the man. May El Shaddai give you favor in the man's sight, so that he will release to you your other brother as well as Binyamin. As for me, if I must lose my children, lose them I will. The men took that gift, and they took twice the money with them, and Binyamin, then they prepared, went down to Egypt, and stood before Yosef. When Yosef saw Binyamin with them, he said to his household manager, Take the men inside the house, kill the animals, and prepare the meat. These men will dine with me at noon. The man did as Yosef ordered and brought the men into Yosef's house. Upon being ushered inside Yosef's house, the men became fearful. They said, It's because of the money that was returned in our packs the first time that we have been brought inside, so that he can use it as an excuse to attack us, take us as slaves, and seize our donkeys too. So they approached the manager of Yosef's household and spoke to him at the entrance of the house. Please, my lord, the first time we indeed came down to buy food, but when we got to camp, we opened our packs, and there inside our pack was each man's money, the full amount. We have brought it back with us. Moreover, we have brought down other money to buy food. We have no idea who put our money in our packs. Stop worrying, he replied. Don't be afraid. Your God and the God of your father put treasure in your packs. As for your money, I was the one who received it. Then he brought Shimon out to them. The man brought the men into Yosef's house and gave them water, and they washed their feet, and he provided fodder for the donkeys. Then they got their gift ready for Yosef's arrival at noon, for they had heard that they were going to eat a meal there. When Yosef arrived home, they went in the house and presented him with the gift they had brought with them, then prostrated themselves before him on the ground. He asked them how they were and inquired, Is your father well, the old man of whom you spoke? Is he still alive? They answered, Your servant, our father, is well. Yes, he is still alive. As they bowed in respect, he looked up and saw Binyamin, his brother, his mother's son, and said, Is this your youngest brother of whom you spoke to me? And added, May God be good to you, my son. Then Yosef hurried out because his feelings toward his brother were so strong that he wanted to cry. He went into his bedroom, and there he wept. Then he washed his face and came out, but he controlled himself as he gave the order to serve the meal. They served him by himself, the brothers by themselves, and the Egyptians included at the meal by themselves. Egyptians don't eat with Hebrews because that is abhorrent to them. So they sat there facing him, the firstborn in the place of honor, the youngest in last place, and the men expressed their amazement to each other. Each was given his serving there in front of him, but Binyamin's portion was five times as large as any of theirs. So they drank and enjoyed themselves with him.
Any thoughts? Questions? Ideas? Opinions? Dave?
This has got to be like the climax of the story.
Almost climax. Almost. That's climax, correct. Yeah. It's leading up to the Big Bang. If I could use that word. Yes.
Climax, yeah.
I was thinking as he was asking about the father and the you would think that the brothers would kind of like, could this be Joseph or what? Was this to Reuben that he was just saying it to one person or... No, the father was
them. It said them. Plurality is them.
Right. So some of them might have had... Could this possibly be our...
Well, that's true. It's kind of, good question. We'll address that today because that was... I will give you an answer to that one. Yes.
I'm wondering about the five times bigger portion that Benjamin had.
Interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Well, we'll get to there. There's a reason behind it all. We have to understand a little bit more about the history.
Especially when the boys, they all bow down before this guy, you know.
Right. Well, that's required. Yeah. I mean, he is the Lord and Master of all of Egypt.
But you don't walk up
and say, "How you doing, Joe?" Right. I can't do that.
Right. But did they remember his dream? That was the point, you know.
No.
They remember Joseph.
He remembered the dreams. They did not.
17 years.
Does that answer your question? Because the dream is not in this story yet.
Yeah. Oh.
The dream was in the previous chapter.
Yeah.
I don't know if you were here or not, that Joseph remembered it.
Oh. Uh-huh.
But he didn't tell them what he remembered. Oh, yes.
It's interesting the unity that calamity can bring.
Yeah.
Because
force calamity.
Yeah.
This is how God works. We know that.
Yeah. Well, just, you know, when Joseph was home, it's like the groups of brothers are kind of at each other's throats. There's a little bit of, you know, they're up here and they're down here. And
yeah, we'll talk about that conflict.
They're all.
Yeah. We'll talk about that conflict now. It's very interesting. You know, sometimes we think there is a great trial or tribulation that's going to come even upon our country. Know this much. Yes, it will come. The object is to bring forth fear, terror, frightening, so we will stop bickering amongst ourselves and become together to join either in battle or as in unity to support. One of those two will take place. You know, every time there is a call, how many times have you known when two brothers had fight one another? But a third party comes in and do harm to one of them. What does the other brother do? I don't like you, but I can beat the guy up.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
You know, and that's, God created it for that reason. You know, the unity or the connection of what they call blood brothers. Okay. Okay. Yes, Pat.
I thought it strange that they served Joseph alone, and then the brothers alone, and then the Egyptians alone, because it was abhorrent to the Egyptians to eat with Hebrews.
Well, we'll get that. The wording is very awkward. We'll talk about that today, too, because it's very strange on that wording, because technically speaking, he didn't eat alone. That is Joseph. He did not technically eat alone. We'll get into that. As we, the old 1611 English, a little bit better explaining that. Yes.
In my mind's eye, I imagine like a big room where maybe Joseph had his own table and the brothers had their own table and then his servants, you know, the people
right.
in his household had their own table. So they were in the same room together. They could talk to each other and whatnot, but they still had their separate tables or their separate spheres. And it kind of reminds me of a documentary you're watching of Charles Darwin, of all people. The reason he got his assignment on the HMS Beagle that started his whole scientific endeavor was because the captain did not have any social equals to be able to socialize with on the boat, because he was the admiral, he's the captain of the ship. He could not socialize with any of the members of the crew, otherwise it would have really messed up the military hierarchy and this and that.
Actually, even messes up. Yeah, even messes up though. Even in business, the CEO cannot go out and have make friendship with, because all of a sudden that plateau becomes, there's an evenness then, and then the people get to say, oh, but what about this? What about that? Why did you do this? Why did you do that? You know, and it gives the CEO no ability to fire.
Yeah, it tears down those
the respect.
The respect.
So I'm not saying that. This should be done in any like in a home. This the children should always show respect to the parents. Parents should not become equal with them.
Yeah.
All right, even when they get old, like me. I'm just telling you that because the Word of God is very strong. Here we have, by the way, very fascinating, because even the old men now wouldn't do anything with tell who said it's okay. Israel or Jacob. So, well, they always responded, because that was the way it should be, and it should be within our own personal private life. When Ellie's father was still alive here, strange, it may sound strange, I gave respect and honor to him. Whatever he had in mind, I'll do my very best to try to fulfill for him.
Amen.
That's what I did. And I won his respect and his honor by just the little things.
Sure.
Even though he's not my blood, doesn't make a difference. Mm-hmm. He was in my house, he lived here, and he was the elder.
Sure.
All right. Accommodated as much as we could for him. He also would listen to me when I didn't want him to use an awful lot of foul language. He heard. And he responded, and he stopped in the household. I mean, outside the door, he may do something else. But his latter years, the man changed quite radically. He became baptized. I think within 1 year later, he died. 2 years later? No, it was Feast Tabernacles, being baptized up there in... Windsor? No, it was in Healdsburg.
He was baptized at 85 and he died at 88. So he had 3 years.
In 3 years, yeah. So it's kind of interesting to know that. Well, 3 years is all God seems to require sometimes, right?
Yeah.
Woe be unto you. No. All right. Now we go into the 43rd chapter. I hope that, by the way, I know that I really stick very heavily in Genesis in this particular period of time, because I think it's very one of the most important books. In fact, my mind is the most important book. Without its beginning, there is no ending, right? So we have to begin somewhere, and you've heard me say that many times before. So let's go to the first verse. There's famine that was sore in the land. This is English, 1611 English here. And so... we have a report, and now all of a sudden there's something there. Verse 2 says, they ate up the... what did they eat up?
Grain.
The grain. All right. Now, normally, if you had grain, you went and bought some grain, what would you do with some of it?
Store it.
No, you plant it.
Grow more.
Well, why couldn't he plant it? Because the famine was severe. All right. Now, not everything is affected by a famine immediately. Listen carefully. Now, there goes the play on words here. We'll get to the play on words much later down the line when we reach to another book. And Joseph or Judah spoke it to him, that is Israel or Jacob, as saying, the man. What's the man's name?
Nothing up
in. All right, keep that in mind, because that's the man. All right. Now, why is it not repeated many times? Because that's not the issue. The issue is very plain in words. It's called the man, Ha'ish.
The man.
That comes into play later on, much later on. We'll find out how that play. But when we use a slang expression here in English, and we say, you're the man, right? Well, what does that kind of mean in our slang expression? Yeah, you're the one's big decision. You're the one's important. You're the one that is in charge. You don't care what the name is. You're the man, right? And so that's a phrase that's picked up from Judaism, by the way. It's not picked up in English. It just pulls right out of the Bible. That's where it's written first, right? So apparently where it's written first, if that's what matters. It's written in Bereshit, by the way. And he spoke harshly to them. And verse 5, Judah's still saying, and if you, Jacob, will not go, if you will not send him, we will not go down because the man said to us, you will not see my face. If you don't bring down your youngest son, you will not bring my face. You will not see my face. Meaning you will not come before his land. Can't enter into his land. And then Israel said, therefore, deal ye ill with me. That's what Israel's turning now, or Jacob turning now to his sons and says, why are you doing this to me? Why did you even tell the man that you had another brother? Well, the man asked. So, because he's the man, we told him. He's the one in authority. He's the one that either permits us to buy grain or permits us not to buy grain. He is the man. I thought Pharaoh was the man. Oh no. Joseph was the man. Or not Joseph. Who was the man? What was his name again? He's getting it down pat now. And so it's very important. Now, what does it mean now?
God who sees and hears.
What does it mean? You forgot. That which is hidden is being revealed. The first name is that which is being hidden. The second one, that which is being revealed. So revealing that which is hidden. And what did Joseph say to Pharaoh? You remember what he said about the dream? Who was going to reveal to Joseph that which was hidden to Pharaoh?
Ha Elohim.
Ha Elohim. Very important. No, it's Ha Elohim, not just Elohim, but Ha Elohim. Very interesting play on words. Now, let's go on now. Okay, and so he asked about the brother, and he says, well, because he asked, and what are we going to do? I had to answer him, and so he said, yeah, okay, bring your brother down. What? Bring your brother down. So I guess, of course, you know, we have this wonderful thing for us today. We have this wonderful thing called hindsight. Right? So we look at the story and says, well, we know what the story is all about. Right? We understand what's going on because God has granted us wisdom. Well, not really. He grabbed us to look back and look at his word, and we said, oh, where are you going? See, if you were there, if you're one of the brothers who went down there, what would you be seeing? You'd be seeing the man who has in their mind authority over life and death.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Grant you grace or grant you cursing. That's what that man had.
Mm-hmm.
But as we go down there, we also found of it. Now, remember that Joseph, one thing he discovered when Reuben said something, what did Reuben say that Joseph realized something? What did Reuben say previously when he first went down?
You should have not messed with the boy. Should have left.
No, that's what he told his brothers. What else? But what did he say they heard? What did Joseph hear? Blood. Ah, for the first time, Joseph realized, they think I'm dead.
Oh.
I'm not dead.
Oh, okay.
But not all of them. Some knew he was not dead. You remember when Reuben went to pull and to save, get his brother back out of the pit? He was gone. What did the brothers do? They went and took his garment and made it bloody. Now you mean all 11 were there making it bloody? Well, Reuben wasn't there when he was taken. All right. Now, something else took place. Now, we had a plan last week. We had this thing about somebody very special. Who did Joseph keep back?
Simeon.
Why did he keep Simeon back?
He was involved.
Simeon was involved with the whole plot.
Oh,
all right. Now, Simeon was involved in the plot. Why would Joseph go out of the way to bind him up, to bound him up?
That's what he did to
he probably was the
because he was the one that bound up Joseph. Fair play, fair mark. Turn around, you get paid for what you did to me. I'm going to pay back for what you did.
Hmm.
All right. So we have this Simeon now was involved. So we know Simeon was one of them that were involved with throwing him in the pit. But Simeon's job was to they wanted to kill him. Remember?
Yeah.
And of course Judah, in his wisdom, says, "Wait a minute, we can make some money on this, Dad." We got money on this. Yeah. So we know there's two of them. We know Simeon was involved. We also know that Judah was involved in whatever took place. Reuben wasn't.
Yeah.
All right. Reuben went back and found him gone. So all of a sudden you have this eye-opening thing. Oh, they think I'm dead. Why did Jacob... Joseph, name his first son Manasseh.
To forget.
Manasseh.
To forget.
To forget. What do you want to forget?
His family.
Why?
Because they sold him.
Not only that, he figured they abandoned me completely. They don't want anything to do with me. Dad didn't come after me. Because as far as Joseph was concerned, Dad should have known he's still alive.
Right.
And been sold.
Yeah.
That's what's going through. Remember, Joseph wasn't a full wise man who understood everything on the sun. He was only given what God gave him. The other point of the picture is, here, we see now Joseph was realizing something took place. Do you understand what I'm saying so far?
Mm-hmm.
All right. We'll get into the relationship with the Messiah in a minute. But listen here further. Now, let me ask you a question. Was Joseph kind of aware at the age of 17 that there was a family feud going on?
Yes. Of course.
How would he know that?
It was there all of his life.
17 years of it.
His mother,
all the names.
Keep going.
His mother was hated by Leah's kids and Leah.
See, the two families were fighting against hard one another, right? From two different women.
And the names.
And in order to insult, he would not dare, because Reuben could not possibly go and have a sexual relationship with Rachel, because she was dead. So he had a sexual relationship with one of Rachel's maids, right?
Mm-hmm.
To do what?
To
put shame and disrespect and dishonor to that side.
Yeah.
He wasn't full of lust. He did it deliberately. And of course it made Jacob very mad. Remember what Jacob said about Benjamin the first time? They first wanted to take him down? No, they first wanted to go. He says, I'm going to keep Benjamin back. Why?
Lest something happen to him.
In case there's harm going to come to him. Well, wait a minute, Jacob. What about the other sons you have? Won't harm come to them too? No. How do you think he knew harm was going to come to Benjamin?
It was Rachel's kid.
Because the brothers were going against Benjamin as they had been going against Joseph prior. Remember that they hated Joseph? And then Joseph told them more dreams and he hated them all the more? Then they wanted to kill him? So there's a big, huge family feud there. Keep this part in mind because at the end of the story, we'll understand something that Jacob said. Yes.
You said Rachel maids. I thought there was just one maid.
A maid, all right, correct. There's only one maid.
I just wondered.
You're right.
One.
Okay. So you think Jacob, or the man, was aware of just who these brothers were. Why would you think he was angry? Remember at first he first met them, he was crying? No, he was angry at them. And in order to let his fury out of them, because he's going to kill them because he is the man, he decided to accuse them of being what?
Spies.
So put the whole lot in prison. Put the whole lot in dungeon. All right. Then they heard this thing from Reuben, who said, "We should have listened to the lad who cried out in sorrow, cried out for deliverance from this, what's going to happen to him." And he said, Reuben says, "Now we have to pay for the blood." Elohim. Ha Elohim is directed into Ha Elohim in this case. Elohim was going to pay us back for what he did. Oh, and all of a sudden you hear the next thing, Joseph began to get old. And he went into his room and he had to contain himself, right? Then he went back out again. And then he says, "Okay, so what I'm going to do." 3 days later, 3 days he was gone, remember? While his brothers were still sitting there, what are they going to do with 3 days? And all of a sudden, we have here now Joseph coming in 3 days later and saying, "Okay, this is what I'm going to do. I'm going to keep one of you here while the rest of you go back and fetch your brother and bring him here. Then I'll know." See, in our hindsight, of course, we would have had foresight then too, right? We'd had insight then, right? If we were there, right? And we would know exactly where Joseph was at them, right? Well, no, we wouldn't. We would be just like they were. What was over their eyes?
A veil.
Blinder. That's why they couldn't hear. That's why they didn't understand the words. Why they couldn't figure out why this guy's asking about their father. Is the father still alive? You would click your mind. Oh, click, 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 click. Oh, he must be somebody important. No, they were terrified, frightened. They were going to go to prison. Of course, they knew they were going to be. For 3 days, they were sitting there waiting. What's going to happen to us? Well, it happened in their mind. You go like crazy. They consider us spies. You know what happened to spies? They get shot.
Oh, yeah.
Or hung in those days. Or off with your head. You know, whatever it is in those days. So they were afraid. They really were afraid of their losing their life. Of course, we know. Of course, we have wonderful wisdom. We knew what Joseph was going to do. Okay, let's go on to verse 8, when Judah starts saying to his father, "Send the lad with me." And all of a sudden, Judah's words begin to change a different sound. You remember many years ago, not 14 years ago, more than 14, because Joseph right now was probably about the age of, 38 years old. So it was quite some years down the line, right? And they didn't recognize him because why? He looked like a what?
Egyptian.
Egyptian. We'll get to this point where he ate in a minute. And he said, verse 9, "For sure," I've used this English, 6011 English. Very important why I use 6011 English. And I don't like the soft sounding words that come through in many translations. And this is why I'm sticking with 1611, because 1611, the definition in 1611 was a whole lot more powerful than we have today moving that English language to modern 20th century. And the phrases being made are more powerful in 1611. That's why it's translated, and it's, I will be a surety. Now, what does surety mean? In 1611, that same thing it meant back when they translated. What do you think it meant?
Guarantee.
I will be the one. For what? If Benjamin does not return, I'm the one that you can put all against me, and not just against me, because the latter part of that sentence says, then let me bear the blame forever. Olam. Oh, he wasn't talking about Benjamin. Jonah wasn't talking about his personal and private life any more than when Reuben said what he said to Jacob, kill my sons if I don't do this. Wipe out my generation. Kill all of my kids. My name will never be known and never be heard and never be remembered. Judah is saying the very same exact identical thing. Those are not idle words. Let the house of Judah disappear. Cease to exist. I guarantee it. You know, back in those days, what would we think? You're insane. We think, you idiot. You're putting your family in the line of death. What's wrong with your stupid thinking? We didn't have a psychiatrist come up and say, oh, Judah, you got a problem. Oh, Judah, take some pills. Oh, Judah, get your mind all settled out. Oh, Judah, we need to settle you down. Right. Maybe I should take some because I'm getting... Oh, right. But you understand what I'm saying here? It's not a words of idleness here. Mm-hmm. These are the words of the nation, the peoples, all of the his sons and his sons' sons, his children's, his grandchildren, if they were alive, which we'll see they will be, are dead. That's what means give. I am the surety. My family is a surety. My sons are the surety. My grandchildren are the surety. Same thing Reuben said when he said, kill my sons. Now we say, wow. Would you dare say that to your own flesh and blood father? Don't answer the question. Just think about it. So those are pretty powerful statements, wouldn't you say? Mm-hmm. Now, it's a very interesting word. I'm going to take a breath here for a minute. Now, 11, the father said to their father, Israel said to them, it be so now, do this. Now, certain phrases here, to listen to this very carefully. Take the choicest fruits of the land in your vessels. Carry them down the man a present. A little balm, talk about that. A little honey, a little spicery, a little myrrh, and nuts and almonds. And take double money with your hand and the money that was returned to your mouth by your sacks. Again, and pre-adventure, tell them it was an oversight. What did Joseph say in here? He says, you tell them, here's the money. It was our oversight for not paying you the money. Take the blame, you guys. Basically what Joseph was saying, you know, when you found the money, you should have gone down there and paid them. They didn't. Wait for a year later. So now the second trip here down, remember, they didn't have any grain, but they had what? They had fruit. They had balm with a soothing oil for plants, and it comes actually from the leaves, like, you know, that's the essential oils. Basically, it's what it boils down to. And nuts, but it says nuts, and that's really the pastrami's, and the pistachios, rather, and almonds. I'm sorry. And they had gold or silver. Now, they had twice as much gold or twice as much silver they had last time. All right, so we know that the land wasn't not producing. It was producing. Now, he says a little honey, because it wasn't that much, because not very many crops. But the trees still have produced. Trees still produce the fruit. Okay? So, quote, were they starving to death? No. What's your problem? You had no faith? They had no grain. What didn't they need grain for? They had everything else.
Bread.
Can't you leave? Very important bread. Biblically speaking, bread is the most important thing. Yeah. It's not a minor thing. It's the most important thing. Now, we come to this thing and we say, okay, we'll take us down to the man. And he said, El Shaddai, give you mercy before the man, that he may release unto you your brother and Benjamin. that I will be bereaved of my children. If I be bereaved of my children, I am bereaved. You know what bereaved means?
Bereaved because they're going to be dead.
It's the same word they use for a woman who's barren. No children. I'll have no children. Because he could have lost them all. Going down the second time, the man decided to kill them all. He'd have no children. Became childless. I'll use this phrase here in Jeremiah. You don't have to tell there. I'm just going to read some scriptures here. And this is the God speaking now. And I will fan them. This is Jeremiah 15, verse 7. And I will fan them with the fan of the gates of the land. I will bereave them of children. I'll destroy my people since they return not from their ways. You know, when God says he's going to bring forth the fan, what's a fan for?
And the flame.
To spread the chaff off of the wheat.
Okay.
The winnowing fan. Mm.
And what that chaff is, being the children, will be gone. God warns Ephraim in the book of Hosea, I am going to bereave you. Mm-hmm. Means your children are going to go. There's also a translation, I don't have it right here, that means I will abort your children. Oh, wow! Abortion! Wow! Where'd that come from? Oh, wow! Man did it! Oh, wow! Man's responsible! Oh, wow! Wait. God said, I will abort your children. Because you have ignored me completely. You refused to hear what I had to say. And it's a prophecy that's going to happen at the end time to the house of Ephraim. That's pretty serious, isn't it? So we have to keep our ears open, wise eyes open. Who is behind all the quote the evil that's taking place? When God said, I am going to do something, we have a tendency to say, oh no, he's not going to do it. He's going to allow it to happen. I've heard so many people say, God doesn't do it. He allows it to happen. But he himself, in his words, says, I will do this. He doesn't say, I'm going to pass away. I'm going to step aside and let you do what you want to do. No, he says, I am going to do this. Because we don't look at God as El Shaddai. Mm-hmm. We look at God as God is love.
Yeah.
We don't look at the power of El Shaddai. So I'm not saying that he is responsible for abortion. I'm saying that when Hosea is very clear, just a minute, says Hosea, chapter 9, verse 13, 14, though they, Ephraim, bring up their children, yet I will bereave them, make them childless. Not a man, not a single person will be exempt. Yea, woe unto them when I depart from them. After he has bereaved them, gotten rid of their children. Now, there's another prophecy. I think it's in, what was it, Amos? He says, because you have neglected me, refused to hear what I have to say, I will not protect your children. So you listen, respond, hearken unto, because it's your children's life that is at stake. That's your, now you had a quick hand.
I'm wondering, how does one pray for change, or how does one pray, period, for when you know that God is the one judging or bringing the judgment? And then when you were talking about abortion, I just thought of all the people that I know that stand at abortion clinics and pray that, and...
Well, I think God hears those who are praying. Don't get me wrong. Mm-hmm. He's not going to hear those who pray, oh, God, take away this baby. I'm going to go to the abortion. Keep me alive when it's finished. I don't think God hears that one. You understand what I'm saying? There's a difference between that approach. Okay? Since we have neglected God in our educational system, we don't want him anymore. We don't want him in our Supreme Court. We don't want him in the local judges. We don't want him in the local police officers. We don't want him in our governments, locally or internationally. We have thrown him out. When you throw God out, he's going to say, bye.
That's a hard word.
And I'm going to bring, I'm going to let you do what you want to do. I'm going to bring this against you. because I have chosen you. Ephraim. Yes.
I don't hear him say, pray that your children would be safe, or those who pray for their children. He doesn't say that. He says, those people who have forgotten to do what I said. So I don't think it's a matter so much of prayer. It's a matter of paying attention to what he says and do it. And
well, in the book of John, we talked about this 2 years ago, about the eighth day. And in there, the blind man said, we know that Elohim does not listen to sinners. No matter how hard a sinner prays, he will not be heard. We say, wait a minute, what about me? Well, have you repented of sinning? Ah, if you have, he will hear. If you haven't repented of sinning, don't stop sinning. So I'm sorry, God, I killed my child, to go back next year. So I'll kill that one. So I'm sorry, God, I killed that one, and go back. He's not going to hear that one because you're the act of committing murder. He hasn't stopped it. That's my personal opinion. But
and you know, like Abraham prayed. I think it was Abraham that prayed that, you know, if there's 50 righteous in the
city. Yes.
Yeah.
All the way down to, what's it, 5? 10. It's only real, real small.
He can
withhold his judgment. You can withhold the judgment. But you must change. Repentance does not mean I'm saying I'm sorry. Mm-hmm. Repentance means changing how you think, more how you do. When you change what you do, it will change how you think. All right, where am I at now? All right, let's move on to... and then when Joseph saw Benjamin with them, and he said, you know, who is this younger brother, and so on and so forth. Verse 17. And it says, here it says, now in this case it says, the man, the steward, that is, the second in command of Joseph's house. Now he put him in a little casual word, but the steward was as powerful as Joseph in second authority. Right? That's what they were. Stewards were in those days. They weren't just a slave. They were just a bond person. They weren't bond. He was second in command under Joseph and his household, not the nation of Israel. Oh, not the nation of Judah. Egypt. And so... what happened to and the men? He was going to take the men to Joseph's house, and the men were afraid. Verse 18, because they were brought to Joseph's house. What's different? Were they brought to Joseph's house the first time?
No.
Now they're twice as scared. They're going to the man's house. They're going to face the final judge. Can you imagine they would be terrified? We talked about them when they're terrified, what do they do? They become united. Not in strength, but they become united because of fear. It's very interesting, right? Terror does something. When America was hit, in 9/11, at a whole, what happened to American people? It unified us quickly. All of us were devastated by it. But one thing bad about 9/11, it dispersed. And we are now more divided than ever. American people, American citizenship is more divided now than ever that I've ever seen in my particular life. There might have been worse except the Civil War. Probably the worst time we've ever been disunited. But took a terrible war to unite us, didn't it? Took devastation. But we stopped doing something as a nation, as a people. We stopped making excuses for slavery. We stopped making deals. This state will be free, that state will be slave. This state will be free, that state will be slave. Stupidest argument in the history of America. Stupid. Foolishness. And we paid the price. Very heavy price. Anyway, we know that this man, he brought him for Joseph. They were terrified. And and that the men were afraid because of this. And so they talked to the steward and said, no, wait a minute, we paid. And the steward says, yeah, I know, you paid. I got my money. Don't worry about it. What's so funny about it, what did the steward do when they first came down? You remember what the steward did? After all of, when Joseph realized, oh, they think I'm dead. You know, all of a sudden, Joseph's, quote, attitude changed. No, he thought changed. He believed this. He began to understand a little bit more about the dream. All right. What took place? He told the steward, go out there and put the money back into the bag. That steward got paid. Yeah, he got paid.
Sure.
But he's satisfied. He got paid. What did he do? He obeyed the man and put the money back. As far as the steward was concerned, he got paid. All right, no problem. He wasn't lying. He got paid. He didn't tell him I'd put it back because the man told me to do it. Well, they didn't call him the man then. That's a Hebrew phrase and not an Egyptian phrase. Very important. Anyway, so they came down and told him about the story. And the steward used a very interesting word. Verse 23. He says, peace be unto you, fear not. Verse 23. Your Elohim and Elohe of your father has given you a treasure in your sacks. I had your money. And he brought Simeon unto them. Now, that's a strange statement, isn't it? What do you think was going through his mind? You know, his phrase was, your Elohim and your father's Elohe has done this. Why would you think he's done that? What was the thinking of the Egyptian thoughts in those days? It's like every thought, every country had an Elohim over them. Why would they come in that belief system? Because why? Way back in the book of Genesis and the 11th chapter, there were how many nations?
70.
Somebody had responsibility on high to manage and to be overseer of those 11 nations. Book of Daniel, what did he call them?
Princes.
And they were over, invisible. You can't see them. What did the Apostle Paul call them? Principalities of the air. You can't see them, but they are the ones that are responsible. They are the overseers, or they are the rulers thereof. So when you go back, we can't in our world, because in our world we can't picture a principality that would over any country, except, of course, you know, the devil's over every one of them. You know? No, he's not over every one of them. What did Jesus say? Kingdom that is what?
Divided.
So he's not over them all, is he? What's going to happen to them? Fall. Yes.
And Daniel said where Michael said I would have been here sooner, but
yes.
I was delayed by the...
He's a principality of the air.
Yeah.
What's the other big name, principality of the air?
Gabriel.
Well, two big names show up in the Bible. They're responsible. And Michael is the overseer of... I think, personally speaking, he's the overseer of the house of Judah. Because that's what he is, okay? So each one of those 12. How many tribes are there?
12.
Book of Revelations, how many elders are there?
12.
No, it's 24. Why is it 24?
Two from the apostles and Israel.
Playing the role of king and priest. Two divided. But more the function of what a priesthood would be. So I got 24 elders up there. What do they have in their head?
Crowns.
What does that mean? They must have authority, right? But see, in our world, we say, no, they don't. They don't exist. The whole book of Revelation is a joke. I don't believe it. What's really in charge is, I'm sorry, I don't normally do this, but listen to me carefully. The right wing is taken over. The left wing is taken over.
Yes.
The Democrats have taken over. Republicans have taken over. That's how we look at life, right? Yes. The liberals are in charge. The conservatives are in charge. Yes. That's how we look at life. We don't believe at all. Because we believe the Word of God is not true. We believe the Word of God is a lie. Why do we believe it's a lie? Because look who we voted for. We are responsible. No, wait a minute. Who's in charge of the nations of this world?
God.
Now, when does the Messiah, or the Lamb, take over all of the nations?
The millennial kingdom. When the kingdoms of this
world... The seventh trumpet.
Yeah, that's right.
Now the kingdoms of this world become the kingdoms of our
Lord
and His Lamb.
Yeah.
All right. So God's not in charge, is he? He is. And all those principalities of the air, if they were on God's side, they're okay. If they're not on God's side, they're a loser. We know one of them that is not going to be on God's side. What God says, what's his name?
Ashtaroth.
Antichrist.
Prince of Persia.
The ruling line.
We know the
Assyrian. What revelations? What's the one last principality he's going to go after? Gog.
Oh.
Gog's the last one he's going to wipe out. Even though we think Gog can be wiped out before, but it doesn't say that. He releases the devil. The devil goes after to bring Gog in. And then God eliminates Gog. We kind of think he will be eliminated. No, don't get me wrong. The devil will be the last one to be thrown in there. Maybe dead. We're not talking about that right now. I was talking about the principalities, so that we see this steward, and he sees the nations, and he knows they're probably more knowledgeable about the truth, quote, end quote, than we are today. Because in our world, we think that man's in charge.
Mm-hmm.
And the Word of God says, no, they're not. I have designated 70 nations. There's no more. Wait a minute, we have League of Nations. No, wait. We have United Nations. How many are there? 250 or something. Ridiculous. A stupid number.
Yeah.
We can inflate anytime we want, right?
Yep, that's man.
People are capable of inflating. I've got to close this off real quick. 6:34 o'clock. I'm going too far, aren't I? Okay. I want to get down to... separation of the bread. I want to get to there because that was a question that was asked to me. Of course, so Joseph realized who his heart was yearned, and brother, he went away and he wept, and so on and so forth. And then verse 31, when he came back and he washed his face and came out, and he refrained himself and said, set the bread. It's a really odd word. He's speaking to his servants. Now what happened to the servants? He's telling his servants, those who are to place the bread, or we'll get to this word later, and present it before Joseph. So the servants came through and they set the bread, or set this before him. Who's the him? Where'd you go?
Joseph. Nothing up in
there. That's who he was. Right? He wasn't Joseph.
No.
And he set them, or for themselves, for those who were placing the bread, because the Egyptians might not eat with the Hebrews, for it was an abomination. Now, backtrack here a bit. They set aside, before him, they set aside by himself, for himself, and then for them, the brothers, by themselves, and then for the Egyptians, why? That they did eat with him. The Egyptians ate with whom? Ate with the him. Who's the him?
Joseph.
Yes.
Joseph.
So now we see a separation. Joseph, at this point in time, is still separating himself completely from the family. Don't picture that he is over here eating by himself and his brothers are overeating over here and a bunch of Egyptians eating over here, because it says the Egyptians ate with him or by him because the Egyptians could not eat bread. All right, now, we'll get to this portion. Verse 33, and they, the brothers, sat before him, the man, the firstborn according to his birthright, and the youngest according to theirs. And the men marveled with one another. They didn't get the picture yet. You know why? The blinders are still there. They weren't supposed to see. Now, we have wonderful hindsight. We'd say, oh, what's going on here? And we would challenge the man. What are you doing, the man? What are you doing putting us this way? Who are you? Why are you, the man, asking about our father, man? No, they didn't dare use those words. They didn't challenge the authority. We have a tendency today to challenge our authority. We automatically think, because we live in America, we can challenge our authority on the spot. You don't dare do it. The Word of God says not to. No question. They just be puzzled, be bewildered. And the story not over with yet, is it? And so comes this. Now here's this English word. Verse 34. And he, Joseph, basically the man, took. And it says here in, it's been translated different words. You've got to add a bunch of stuff there. Took a messes. You know what messes is? It's an old English word. If you're in the military, you should know what a mess is.
The mess hall.
The mess hall. Okay. It's an old English word. It means where you get a portion. Mess means you get a portion of what? Who gives it to you in the military? Do you get to kind of eat anything you want?
No.
No. They put out there the food. You get a portion of it.
Yeah.
As if you're in the military, you get the portion. You're in military warfare, by the way, you get what you call K rations or C rations.
Or MREs.
That's a little bit. You just get enough. That's your portion. Now, in this portion, Benjamin got five times as much. He probably couldn't eat it all.
I wanted him to gain some weight, I guess.
Why five?
Well, just do some adding up. Why five? Why not two? Why not three? Why not four? Why five?
Double portion.
It's more than double. It's three, five times as much. So was it his mind? Yes.
Does Benjamin's portion five times have anything to do with the other brothers, making it an equal? You have Joseph and Benjamin plus five is seven.
Interesting word. Anyway, looking at that thing. I'll be honest with you, though. I have tried to find out a story of why there is five. Now, five does have a numerical value, a numerical number. All right. But basically five, you know, in the book of Genesis, the first chapter? I think you've read that before, right? Mm-hmm. What happened on the fifth day?
Animals?
Swarms! Birds, swarms of fish, uncountable. So it's a volume that is very large. I don't have a direct answer. I've tried to look that up. Why was five? I don't have an answer for you, Susan. I looked and I lost. I don't have an answer. Okay, maybe we're not supposed to know it yet. Or maybe someone else knows it, hasn't told us yet.
Ellie knows.
Yes.
No, Dola. It has to be something that the other brothers would have spotted, that would have made sense to the other brothers afterwards. It has to have been something for them to say, why did he do that? And after they saw that it was Joseph, then they had to have seen, why five? Why not seven? Why not two?
No, that didn't work.
He was making a statement.
Yes, he's making a statement, but I was thinking that Leah had five sons, but she didn't. She had six.
Yeah.
I was thinking of that one. That doesn't add up either.
Yeah.
Well, anyway, I tried, but I couldn't find an answer, so Susan, I'm sorry. You're on your own. Anyway, and it's the very last interesting word in English. It's five times as much of any of the others. And they drank, and they were what?
Merry.
Merry. What do you think it means? Oh, 60-11 English, what do you mean? Intoxicated. They were really feeling good about themselves. They had more than, well, we would think he had enough. They had a good old time.
New American says I drank freely.
So. Drank freely. It's not the same thing.
No restriction. Huh?
All right. I don't have anything else to say. Daniel's got to get started here pretty soon. Yes.
I think the next two words are real important, though. They were drunk with him.
Yes.
Huh.
Well, hey, what, that's not too unusual.
No, I guess everybody's friends when you're...
They're happy.
Yeah.
Who's going to come in and tell the man, you're drunk? You shouldn't be in charge.
Maybe.
Off with your head. That's what's going to happen to you. All right. Let's take a knife. Let's go.
Yeah.
I don't know what how the hell they killed him. They probably used swords like everybody else did. And but Joseph never, we don't have anything written that Joseph ever killed anybody. But he had that authority because, why? Second in command. Pharaoh had command to execute anybody he wants. Mm-hmm. The only thing that Joseph couldn't have was the control of the throne itself, but he had control of everything else, including the executions. Mm-hmm. At his will.
Yeah.
There doesn't need any proof.
Sure.
At all. A king is a king. He is the law. And he won't go there, but you know anything about Darius. He opened his mouth and he made a law and he had to carry it out. Mm-hmm. And of course, you know, we think, oh, poor old Daniel in Daniel's den, Daniel in the lion's den. And Daniel wasn't thinking one thing bad about it. He said, oh, no problem. And he went, waiting, 24 hours later. Oh, he's still alive? He's still alive? Yeah. And then he could decree. He could kiss it, so it didn't work. He could nullify the law on the spot because it wasn't carried out.
Well, he did carry it out.
He
forced the lions. He carried it out.
But the law was about worshiping.
Yeah.
Not about that, okay? So Daniel continued on praying toward the east, in this case, west.